This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, and I'm Aldana Ambler. And each week we rotate through different growth strategies for mid-sized companies. Most of our listeners are CEOs and presidents of companies that are between about $20 million and $200 million with $1 billion in sight. So, the topics range from going for growth in geographic expansion or strategic alliances or joint ventures or franchising or you name it, an IPO. And I haven't talked about franchising in a while, and so I wanted to revisit that topic. And so I'm going to do a solo show today with talking about the three or four companies that I've seen that have gotten into trouble. You know, you hear the statistics about 90% of franchises succeed, and it's such a great way for people to make money. There's also a lot of complications to it, and so I'm going to pose some issues that people face and how to prevent it. And I want to foreshadow a few of the shows that are coming up. We have some shows in September that are going to be talking about companies that are using multiple growth strategies at once, because it's usually a good idea to pick a couple of prominent ones and not try 16 at once, but we have a few shows where they're going to be entrepreneurs talking about juggling multiple strategies at one time. And that may be what you're doing, so watch for those programs. And I'm also at the rotation about once a quarter. I ask my listeners, think about the growth strategies that you're considering doing and you haven't been doing, you're wondering about it, maybe you haven't had enough information, you haven't had enough time to read about it in some articles, or it's something that you're not seeing articles in the magazines about often enough. What are you interested in? Where do you feel the gap? Let me know. I can be reached at www.thegrowthstrategist.com. The email is Aldana, A-L-D-O-N-N-A, at Ambler, A-M-B-L-E-R.com, or you can call me toll-free at 1-888-ALDANA. So if you know my name, it's easy to get me. Okay, so why would we be talking about franchising? Well, here's one of the reasons. I'll give a couple of stories. Imagine that you are a specialty store, high-end. Maybe you're even on like Fifth Avenue in New York City, and you do spirits, wines, cordials, that kind of thing, or high-end gifts. You get the idea. It's not liquor store specific or apparel specific. It's that you're high-end. You've got a killer design for your bricks and mortar store. You really got a reputation. You've won some awards for how cool your products are. You are incredibly flat-out busy the last 3-4 months of the year around the holidays. So you decide that you're going to be replicating your business. You think that you've got something to this. It's not just that your New York-based store is hot. You think that you could be replicated some other place. So you start looking into maybe some other people would pay you for the model, because that's what franchising is about, right? Somebody could walk around your store and say, wow, if we could just take the same design and plop it in Kansas City, or we could plop this in, Paris, that would make great sense. Why don't we put it in Tokyo? You know, because then, the name of your store is known, and we can leverage this. So you start negotiating with people who have some money, who want to make a copy of your store in a couple of high-end places. Fast forward. You do that with four of them. Now you're in Paris, now you're in Tokyo, now you're in San Francisco, and I can't remember. Pick another place at the time, maybe Buenos Aires. All right? So you've retained the cachet of your store. You didn't put it in, Podunkville, wherever that is. You did pick Paris and Tokyo and San Francisco and Buenos Aires. Okay? Sound smart? All right. Now what happens to you is that a number of your customers want to interact with you on the Internet. And you contact a technology company to really upgrade your website. Not everybody's going to show up, particularly with the kind of products that you have. They're not going to all want to schlep into a store no matter where it is. And now that you've got a customer base and they want to work with you, so you invest quite a bit of money in electronic marketing. Your website's really cool. In fact, it wins some awards. And people are a proportion of your business is not getting up to like a quarter of your business is coming online. What do you think the owner of the store in Tokyo feels, that a quarter of your business is now online? What's the value of their store? How much are they going to feel like they got taken because you look like you're going around them? Feel the tension? How much money should they have paid? What are they really copying? What are they really replicating? You got a fight on your hands. and picture the suit. Now, I'm going to go back to what the solution is, but picture what just happened. Those were all logical moves on your part, replicating the store, taking their money, teaching them how to do what you do, and going onto the Internet. Why not? You say innocently. Now you got a multi-million dollar lawsuit on your hands. Second one. I'm going to take it from the viewpoint of the person who is the franchisee this time. You're in elder care. You know, it's a real important thing now where you go out into the homes and you're taking care of sick people. Maybe it's it's not somebody who needs really high level skilled nursing. It's more companion kind of care. And your idea was, you're going to be in one area. You're going to be in New England, or you're going to be over in the Midwest of the United States. You have a geography that's more than a town. And you thought maybe, if you leveraged a national outfit's name that has a reputation, it's got a good title, it's got some decent-looking marketing, it'd be easier for you to establish yourself. So you find one that has a decent reputation, that has a bit of a model. You negotiate with them. You pay a fee to be part of their franchise. Well, you thought it was a franchise. And you have a formula for what you pay, and you start to set up your first location. Well, when you use their model, it doesn't quite work. It doesn't seem to apply to the towns you're in. They seem to be in maybe large cities, really densely populated, metropolitan areas, and you're in a small city, so it doesn't quite work. So you have to start tweaking the P&L. The balance sheet doesn't look the way they said it was going to. The recruitment methods that they told you don't seem to get you the kind of house companions and people for the folks in the homes that you thought it would. And you have to really, you feel like after about 2 years of this, you've had to redesign basically everything. You thought you were going to have marketing from the home office, but even when you get it, it doesn't quite play in your marketplace. But, it's not bad enough for you to pull out of the contract. Now, because you've improved what you've been doing, and you've got, you've got some momentum now. You've been there a couple years. A few people have approached you. Some of the people who've been coordinators and lead people for you have said, I'd like to have the same kind of company. I'd like to be affiliated with you. You seem to know what you're doing. So you hire somebody who'd be like a branch manager for you. And you set up another small city within, like a 50-mile radius of you, not too close to where you were first doing. And you're doing the training, and you're doing the teaching, and you're kind of coaching them on who they need to hire. And you're really happy about this because now you've got two locations. And then you do it again, and you've got a third location, you've got a fourth location. It's on your marketing. It's on your training. It's on your model. It's on your P&L. Pause for a second. Now think about this. Wasn't the first thing, the first organization supposed to provide that? Wasn't the first major organization supposed to provide enough of a marketing model, enough of a operating model, enough of a profitability, enough support that you wouldn't have to do it on your own? And if somebody were to renegotiate that contract, who owes who money? You got a 2-year court battle coming if it evolves to that point. Third one. Say you're a trainer and a consultant. And a lot of trainers and consultants don't like to sell. There's something about it. They just like, give me the clients, I'll take care of people. And they're not really good at marketing and sales, a lot of them. I mean, I'm not saying everybody is, but there's a lot of trainers and speakers and consultants that just don't like selling. And you've seen, you kept referring for your clients to this one set of materials. You're the type that would go out there and get certified in the Myers-Briggs. You'd get certified in the DISC. There's different psychological models, and you get certified in each method. You got like 5 or 6 of them. And then there's one major company that you find that really has a good approach, and you figure, all right, this is going to bring you referrals, this is going to bring you clients. Let's set up with them. And you've got a payment that you've got in place. There's a specific annual dues that you've got to pay to be one of the partners. That's what they call you. One of the partners that's going to be given referrals from the company. You've been there for a couple of years, and the referrals don't seem to be coming very fast. You go to the conferences that are set up for the trainers, the training family, the partners, and those are interesting training programs. You like the speakers, and you like getting to know the other trainers. But when you really look at the value proposition for yourself, you've been spending quite a bit of money for the last 2 years, and you don't see the business. You don't see the return. You thought you were buying marketing and sales and referrals. In the meantime, let's take the view from the other side. The owners of the key training program, of the material, they've got the books, they've got the high-level speakers, they've got materials. And they're out there giving international-level speeches going all over the place and getting into DVDs and getting into more workbooks and that kind of stuff. I mean, they've got some energy. They've even got a national conference where they bring in some top-end speakers. And so the owner is looking at the model and saying, all right, well, the mix of what we're doing, some of it's coming from the, you know, the consulting that I'm bringing in these partners to do. Some of it's coming from the trainings that I'm bringing these partners to do. But you know what? Those people, they just look like they're sitting there. They don't look like they're stepping up. They don't look like they're selling. They don't look like they're helping with the marketing. It's like I'm supposed to just hand stuff to them. And aren't those people ungrateful? And look at what I'm asking them to pay me. I'm asking them to, you know, I put together this big conference for them to show up to. They get to know each other. They have all that networking. And I'm supposed to just hand them business. Gosh, what a lazy bunch of people. And it's not really said out loud, but there's this distancing that starts to happen between the parent company and the trainers who felt they were paying for a fee for them to get referrals, and they weren't even getting them. And now you have this vicious cycle of who's supposed to say what? Where is it supposed to go? And that doesn't necessarily end up in a lawsuit, but it can end up in kind of collapsing. Is that a franchise? Is that a license? Or is that a, you know, just use of intellectual property? I got a fourth one, but what I'd like to do is I'll take a break, and then we'll go back, and we're going to look at each of these situations and see, can you imagine that that kind of drift can happen to you? That those kind of problems can develop. You meant well. You thought you knew what the difference was. And now you're in trouble. This happens a lot with franchising and licensing. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
The challenge of change comes as ramped up due to the advent of information age and the interconnectedness of global community. In a high-tech world, the ability to embrace change, adapt, and respond accordingly is key to personal and professional success. Talking Change with Ann Powers, airing every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, explores the hows, whys, and what to do's when faced with change. Embrace the new reality, adopt transition into your personal power portfolio, and tune into Talking Change with Ann Powers every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Why is Pepsi cooler than Coke? Why are iPods so popular? In 2005, how can you launch a successful brand? Want to know? Learn about the fascinating and intriguing world of graphic design and branding on Design Matters with Debbie Millman. Every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time, Debbie Millman will provide you with a provocative look into the stimulating world of design as it intersects with contemporary culture. Hear what the experts have to say about creating, maintaining, and launching a brand in today's challenging marketplace. Join us every Friday at 12 Pacific Standard Time for Design Matters with Debbie Millman, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and today I'm talking about growing your business through franchising, but I also want to consider licensing and intellectual property because sometimes people don't know which one they're doing, frankly. And a couple of the examples that I just gave, and I want to go back to, the problem developed in part because people haven't made a really conscious, really firm decision about what model they're doing. I'm going to give a fourth example, and then we'll go from there. Fourth example is, take a technology company. It could be systems integration. It could be applications engineers. It could be IT, you know, the butts and seats. It doesn't matter. Let's just say it's in the IT space. And you're a fairly local company. You know, you've penetrated some big accounts in your area, but you can tell that if you had connections in other parts of the country or around the world, you could go after the multi-site jobs. And you don't really want to go after those really big corporate accounts on your own because then you're going to have to carry the overhead. You're going to have a lot of these engineers and IT professionals and programmers on your payroll, and that's just getting a bit much. So what you do is you reach out to some of your counterparts in complementary markets. Say you're in New York and you reach out to somebody who's in Dallas and he or she reaches out to somebody who's in Chicago. And, you know, you can almost predict exactly where the cities are. You're going to pick the hub cities. You're not going to start with some small place. And five or six of you put together, you know, kind of a collective, and you do some conference calls, and you start getting together, and you say, you know, we're not competing with each other. We're not in the same marketplaces. But if we figure out a way to collectively work and contact some of the big corporations and leverage, we've got five or six of our companies now. We're much bigger than we were. We could do this together. Now, what are we going to call ourselves? You know, we're not going to say that it's the ABCDQF company. All right, so you make up another name for it. And because, you know, you have this nationwide feel, you call yourself something like Nationwide Technology or some name that conveys that you're really going to be available on a national basis. You don't incorporate it as a completely separate entity at first because you don't know if it's going to work. So you basically have a consortium of people that are working together. It's kind of a loose strategic alliance. And you're doing some cooperative selling. But, oh, my gosh, it works. It starts to work. You start getting some big accounts. So then you have to have the conference calls about who's the account manager and who's going to be doing the accounting and who's going to be where's the money going to go through. And you realize, well, we better make this official because we're a little bit open to some difficulties here if we don't keep a track of the money trail, and the clients are going to definitely want to know who they're paying. So you actually create a separate entity because it took. I mean, this actually worked. So I got a separate entity, but it doesn't really have any employees because it has these five or six separate businesses. And at some point, you decide that you want to have a clerk, and that person works for the president of your group. Who's just the coordinator because you're all kind of into consensus. So you just have the secretary of one of the main people do a lot of the logistics related to your meetings and that kind of stuff. All right, now fast forward. It works well enough for you that you start recruiting and filling in the gaps. It's not enough for you to just have San Francisco or L.A. and Dallas and Chicago and Atlanta and New York. You want to start getting Kansas City. You want to start getting Denver. You want to start getting Phoenix. You get it? And next thing you know, and it can happen pretty fast because if you've got a model that works and you're going after big accounts and the momentum starts to happen and you're cooperative and you really, follow through, next thing you know, you're doing quarterly conferences with one another where you bring in each other's sales forces to train one another on how to cooperatively sell. next thing you know, you not only got a core name and a clerk that's working for you, you better decide who's the board of directors, the official board of directors of this new entity. Next thing you know, you've got to put up some more money because it needs some more marketing because it deserves it. This is a really cool entity. You better pay for some decent marketing. The directory ads are different. The display that you would have at a trade show has got to be, you know, unique. It's not the individual companies anymore. This sounds pretty cool, right? Okay. Fast forward. Now you got baby boomers that are running these companies. And they start thinking about exit strategies. And the individual participants in this, they want to sell. Now what? Do you sell as a company of 35 businesses or 40 businesses, or do you sell individually? And if they all didn't completely fold in a roll-up, what are you really doing? Is this for, you know? And then the lawyers look at it, and they say, and the tax people look at it, and they say, this is a de facto franchise. Who are you kidding? Just because you think you're independent companies doesn't mean you still are. And it is a big kettle of fish. It really is a very confusing kind of a thing because you just drifted into a mixed model. Big corporation comes and looks at you and says, we'd like to have what you guys do as a division of our business. Do they have to negotiate with the 35 separate companies? Or can they negotiate with some of you? Can they pick and choose the ones they want? Can they negotiate with just one or two? Do they have to negotiate with, you know, the major entity and buy it all in a whole? And who makes the decision? Sounded good to be flexible, opportunity-driven, open to what's going on. But because the decision about are we or aren't we a franchise, are we or aren't we licensing, are we or aren't we a consortium or a roll-up or whatever we are, can lead to vulnerability for all the companies legally, market confusion-wise, and the exit strategies are extremely confusing. You get it? Now, you can see the innocence. In all four examples, you can see how, you know, people were motivated to grow, pick up on what the marketplace wanted, and, you know, evolve into something cooperative. All four cases, cooperation looked like it was part of the model. And it was also leveraging other people's talent, not always having, you know, the overhead. You didn't have to always have... You're taking on the overhead every single time. Now, there's multiple stories. I mean, there's the ones about the franchisees in restaurants where what if the quality control goes wrong and how much clout the major, you know, the core store has. I mean, there's stories upon stories. I just want to pose this because for all the literature about and all the talk about not, you know, at least like 90% of franchises succeeding, there are the stories of conflict. There are the stories of legal battles. There are the stories of changing contracts and renegotiated fees behind the scenes, particularly with the advent of the Internet. Okay, now, so I'm telling you all these stories not to depress you. It's more of a now what would you do? What could you do to prevent it? Isn't that where we need to go? All right, let's go back to the premise because that's what's gotten lost in some of these stories. To be a true franchise, what you need to have is about five or six key things, and I'm going to go through them because they're the acid test about what's going on in these four situations. A company to franchise needs to have a model that is more than profitable, and that isn't the case in some of these situations because even in the last one where it was the IT business and each of them combined and they cooperated and together they did a lot, does the model necessarily generate more profit because it became combined? And it wouldn't necessarily, because if they couldn't hold individual companies accountable for a profit, a specific profit margin, and kick them out if they didn't hit it, it doesn't quite fit the formality of a franchise. And in the case of the elder care, in the community, you know, the people going out for companion care, home care, if it didn't have a profitability model that would work for the smaller cities, it was going to start falling apart right from the beginning because the person who bought in and paid money for a model, one of the first things they had to do was improve it because it wasn't going to make the money that they needed. So the first thing I want you to think about, but when you're talking about franchising what you do, you need more profit than your competitors. And how much more you can debate. But check out, you know, if you're a restaurant, you know, what the typical kind of margin for your type of restaurant is. An awful lot of restaurants, they're lucky if they get, you know, 4%. Some of the professional service firms are shooting for 20%. It's a little bit of a lie. And things like hospitals, they're lucky if they get one. You need more profitability because you're going to need money to invest in the replication, the training, the market research, the recruitment of the franchisees, the SOPs, you know, all these things that you're talking about, they have to come from, it's like you have two businesses suddenly when you're talking about franchising. You can't just run the existing one. You've got to have a lot of development money to replicate it quickly. And franchises that get in trouble are the ones, some of the ones that do it rather slowly, so that you need some decent money for self-funding growth. Second thing that you need if you're going to be considering franchising, and it can prevent a lot of the problems I just listed, is it something that can actually be replicated? And the geography matters. Now, that's two points, but let's try the geography part first. Go back to the store that I talked about that had the high-end liquors and liqueurs and specialty gifts, and they had the fabulous store in New York. Remember them? Can it be replicated? Yes. But what are you replicating? If what you were replicating was the bricks and mortar, the image of the store, and the hands-on, it depends on interaction, it depends on people, it has more of a potential for franchising. When the model morphs into it doesn't need the interaction, and it really can depend and it can be driven by electronic commerce, the need for it to be franchised drops like a rock. And if you can tell, if you can, you know, and these people just couldn't predict it, but now you can. Look at what you're selling. If it does look like the you're going to be less and less and less dependent on the interpersonal interactions with people showing up, like with a car, you're still going to have some dealerships because people need to do the test drive. No matter what VX.com does, I know they have the virtual test drive, and that looks pretty cool. But most of us are still going to have to look at the car and say, oh, gosh, that's a little bit bigger than I thought it was, and look at an SUV and say, oh, that's a little bit smaller than I thought it was, and drive the thing to get a sense of whether or not it feels good on your butt. You are going to need to test drive. Unless it has that kind of, you need a geographic feel. You need that touch, the interactive, the retail feel to it. There's less and less and less of the need to replicate the bricks and mortar. So in the case of the liqueur store, the, you know, the specialty high-end liquors and wines, when their model changed, to me, they needed to contact the five other stores that are out in the world and communicate with them about that the model is changing and invite each of them to participate in the electronic model or not. And they could even negotiate payments. They, because when they changed their model and didn't announce it, they were setting themselves up for a crash. They went from a franchise to, you know, an electronic version. You follow what I'm saying? So the second thing that you need is to really have something that is dependent on geography and interaction at a local level. Third thing that you need to be able to make a successful franchise is market research ability. Because where is the location? Where is the optimum profile? What is the market mix? What is the range? What is the geography? Do you really know how to do that? So in the case of the people who were had the companion services and, the, and taking care of elder care and the home services, they didn't have that figured out at all. So they brought on a franchise that it was an entirely different location and didn't know what to do with them. Okay, now I'm going to go to a break again, and we're going to come back and talk through the other pieces of what you need to do to make it a real franchise to prevent some of these problems. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. I'll be right back.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and each week we help mid-market companies that are, most of them are rapidly growing. We're trying to go from about $20 million to $200 million, and a lot of you have $1 billion in mind. So each week I rotate through different growth strategies like, you know, geographic expansion or strategic alliances and acquisitions, and this week we're talking about franchising. And I've presented four classic case studies of people that kind of drifted into their model. They thought they were using a franchise, and they ended up with court cases and conflict. And that happens a lot. And one of the solutions to, you know, preventing that kind of thing or dealing with it is to go back to what are the characteristics of a successful franchise so that you make a conscious decision and don't drift into legal problems. And I got as far as you definitely have to have superior profitability. Don't hedge on that, because if your business isn't, you know, much more profitable than the competitors, it's very difficult to attract people who want to copy the way you're doing it, and you won't have enough money to work through the legal and the marketing and the setup and the replication as quickly as you need to make the franchise really, really work. Even if you get outside financing to drive it, it's very difficult if it doesn't have superior profitability. The second thing we talked about is, you know, is it something that can be replicated and should be replicated in specific geographies? Is geographic expansion the key to growth for the business? It's got to be the key to growth. And, you know, that interpersonal interaction with the consumer, is that the thing that drives it? You know, Mrs. Fields Cookies did need the interaction because people could smell the cookies. Cinnabon needed it because, in fact, they figured out how to have the fan blowing that wonderful aroma of the cinnamon all through the malls. That was their secret to success. It wasn't just the formula for the food. And, you know, they knew how to make sure that anybody within the area of that aroma was going to be drawn like they were hypnotized. And so geographic expansion and replicating themselves in multiple locations quickly was the secret. You've got to ask yourself if that's the secret. Third thing is the market research, because it's not enough to just say, well, we got to have this everywhere. You need to be able to have the expertise to identify what's the profile of the right place. Now, the high-end specialty liquor place knew how to do that. They knew that they needed to be in Paris and Buenos Aires and San Francisco and Tokyo if they were going to be in New York. They knew that that's really good. In their case, that was a secret to success, and they weren't going to come up with thousands of these stores. It's when the electronic model changed the rules that interfered with that. But they did know about replication. On the other hand, the company that I mentioned that was talking about home care hadn't thought that through enough at all. And if they had a model that worked in center cities, they needed to prove it and then recruit franchisees that were from metropolitan areas that replicated their dynamics, their demographics. And they were already set up for problems if they bring on really bright people that are in such different demographics that they feel stuck having to solve it themselves. Now, do you have that kind of market research capability? If you're an operations person and you know how to run your business, that may not be your expertise of finding other locations and recruiting people that can be pathfinders in the new area. And most franchises that I have worked with, one of the things that they've had to do is bring on expertise early on. See, that's why I said you have to have superior profitability. You can't fudge that market research capability. A McDonald's has to know which town is ready, which one has the right kind of highway, what kind of visibility, which site does it need to be on. Donald Trump and his daughter Ivanka, they have to really know where is the next site for a Trump Tower. That's an expertise that not everybody has. And just because you know how to run, you know, an IT shop, or just because you know how to run a training company, doesn't mean you know how to spot geographies and demographics and recruit pathfinders. And there are people that's their capability and they're worth every dime. And that could have made a big difference with the trainers as well, because not only did their model evolve as to what they were trying to do, who they attracted got them in trouble. So the recruitment of, you know, on the surface, the company wanted essentially passive trainers that would just shut up and do the training, and passive consultants who didn't want to do sales. And over time, when they learned a little bit more about what they had, they wanted a different group of people, and they were stuck with the passive people. They were just waiting for it to be handed to them. A really good market researcher and a demographic profiler would have pointed out the dissonance between where the company was headed and the people they recruited. See it? So they're worth every dime. Next thing that you really need if you're going to be a franchise is excellence in marketing. Now, everybody knows that, but boys, I can't overstate that. Take a look at the company that is in the home care. That's probably where they fell down the most. You can almost tolerate that there's going to be different operational needs at a local level. You can imagine that you'd have different kinds of people available to you on a local basis compared to headquarters. But if after you've been with them for a couple years, you don't even have a decent brochure, the website's still terrible. You're not getting the referrals. You're not getting the media calls that you thought you would get because you're affiliated with this national outfit. You know, it doesn't have sizzle. And you're going to start wondering what you're paying for. And in all four cases, the marketing had to be excellent. In fact, some of the things that kept these four companies out of total horrible litigation was that they were all really good at marketing. The public couldn't tell that there was this noise in the background among these four different companies because the marketing was so superior. So if you had to pick one of these attributes I'm talking about to excel at if you're going to be a franchise, pick the marketing. Because take a look at something like any of the chains. Applebee's as a restaurant, you know, they figured out, you know, eating good in the neighborhood. And, you know, they have those guys singing now. I mean, they invest in different menus. They invest in songs. They invest in ads. You know, it motivates somebody who's wanting to buy into a restaurant chain to buy into the marketing. Same with, you pick the restaurant, the ones that you know, the chains that work, they know what to do in marketing. That's not free. That's not cheap. And you need enough profitability to have excellence in your marketing. All right. What else are you selling? You're selling excellence in operations and efficiencies. Your SOPs, your training manual, your procedures have to be tight. So if you created your business and somebody's going to replicate it, I mean, think about what franchising's about. Somebody is paying you to do it your way. They're paying you to do it your way. So your way needs to be very specific. Because some of the people who are going to be buying into franchises, think about who they are. Kind of like the trainers, the ones that are wanting to sit there and they say, I just want to do the training. I just want to do the consulting. I don't want to sell. I don't want to have to do all this marketing. I don't want to figure out all the legal stuff. You guys take care of that. There is a personality type that wants to follow. That, you know, they want something told to them. They want a model. And, you know, if that's the personality, it better be good. You better have some procedures. And that personality type is interesting. They also waffle in and out between wanting to be very independent and say, I did it my way. I'm a business owner. You know, they're a franchisee. They own a business. And they've used their money to make a statement. One minute they're going to sound like they're entrepreneurial and they want independence. And the next minute, if it's not all spelled out, they're going to complain. That's one of the things that's challenging, I think, about having a franchise, is the personality of franchisees. One minute you're dealing with a group of sheep that all want to follow. The next minute you're dealing with adamant, you know, unionized folks that want to protest. The next minute you're dealing with passive followers that just, you know, you just have to tell them what to do and spoon feed everything. The next minute you're dealing with people who feel like they're employees. The next minute you feel like they're local celebrities that can bring all kinds of marketing and sales, and you wonder why they even pay you a fee. The range of their behaviors is really something. So not only do you need operational excellence around your procedures, there is a key role in a franchise of recruiting the franchisees, the care and feeding of the franchisees. You're going to feel like you are in two businesses. You are taking care of the public. You are taking care of customers, making sure that the marketplace is happy. Boy, if you can't figure out how to take care of the franchisees, it falls so fast. It falls like a house of cards. So can you picture what your key executive team is going to look like? It's going to have strong market research and marketing. It's going to have operations methodologies with the lawyers and the engineers and the procedure types and the trainers to make sure it's tight replicated, and you can tell when somebody's breaking the rules, and you sit on it, because as soon as quality goes down, everybody's hurt. And the franchisee relations, the care and feeding of the franchisees to make them feel like a community, make them feel important, make them feel connected, make them feel special. Now, the last thing that's needed is being able to really understand money, to truly work money, because franchisors need to cut very specific deals with the franchisees. They have to cut deals with the locations. Often they're into real estate. They've got to be they have to excel at doing deals. So think about your executive team. If you're thinking about franchising, do you have those key people in place? Market research, marketing, operational excellence, you know, the procedures, the training, the manuals, the quality control. Do you have somebody over legal and finance to manage the deals? You're going to need that in place, and the care and feeding of the franchisees, franchisee relations. If you can find those five people for you to you know, replicate what you started, then you're going to have a shot at this. Try punting and not having those key people in place. It goes back to what those four stories are about. I'm going to go back to solving those four stories in a second. I think we're due for our last break. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. I'll be right back.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast-growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
More and more people are starting their day with informative, focused business talk. Top experts. Today's business issues. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Achieve total wealth management. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern on Business America Radio. Three-Dimensional Wealth is a show dedicated to teaching you a values-based approach to comprehensive total wealth management through practical strategies and expert advice. Take your first step down the road of financial independence. Listen to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern, here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Tune into Small Business Trends Radio with Anita Campbell every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Each week, Anita and expert guests provide a big picture view of the small business market, identifying the trends and major events driving the robust growth of the small business market. Whether you are a small business owner or a company of any size desiring to sell small businesses or reach the small business market with a product or service, Small Business Trends Radio is your resource for trends that influence the global small business market. Right here on the Bottom Line for Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Business information you need, from the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the Growth Strategist. This is Aldana Ambler, and each week we rotate through different growth strategies for mid-market companies. One week it's geographic expansion, and next week it's maybe strategic alliances, and this week it's franchising. Now, what I've done this week is I've gone through four case studies of situations where people drifted into some problems, legal battles and frustrations within the franchise. And then I listed about the five or six key things that a franchise needs to do to be successful. Now, let's make sure we know how that would have helped. What happened to the first company, the one that had the high-end, you know, spirits and liqueurs, and they were in New York and then Tokyo and San Francisco, et cetera, et cetera? Where did they slip up? Do you think it was in the market research? No, because they knew which location. Was it in the marketing? No, because they promoted the model. They had that figured out. They replicated the store. They promoted. I mean, everybody knew what that looked like. Did they have problems in the excellence and the procedures? No, boy, I'll tell you what, those five stores, they matched exactly. They really were motivated to be an exact copy. Did they have problems in, I didn't even mention, the product development of creating something new and being high-end and always having something different that's happening so that you can show that you're leading and somebody else is following you for a reason? Nah, they didn't have that problem. They brought in new products. And were they good at the finances and the contracts? No. See it? That's where they fell. Because when they introduced the electronic marketing, which makes sense, they didn't revisit the terms that they had with the franchisees, and so they felt screwed. See? Poof, you got to know where you're going. Let's try the next one. How about the home care one? The people who had a national franchise, and the next thing you know, the local person in a small town is having to tweak the model. They had to figure out their own marketing, and then they ended up bringing on branches, and they felt like they were doing the job of the franchisor. Okay, let's go through the list. Did they have real good market research? No. They really weren't careful enough about the profile of who they brought on as a franchisee. They brought on somebody who was smarter than them, frankly, and then they didn't negotiate well enough to give them a premium. Were they really good at marketing? No, because there wasn't enough value when the person in the small community, smaller city, couldn't get the brochures and the website and the help and the media leads. This person had to create themselves. They should just sever ties with the major company. They could create a competing franchise and do better. Were they good at operational excellence and cost controls and the model and training? No. Were they good at the product development and continuing to innovate and have something that you're interested in following? No, because the local person didn't even get any help in figuring out where the other branches were going to be. Were they good at the negotiation of contracts and loans and administration? No, because they didn't even charge the right amount for what they were being given. And did they take care of the care and feeding and the community feel for the franchisees? No, because they left this person stranded. Boy, did they fail. Whoa! That's why it was a suit waiting to happen. And they wouldn't be surprised if this person says, this is ridiculous. I'm better at this than you are. I'm going to create a competing franchise, which is exactly what happened. All right, how about the training organization where they initially had fairly passive trainers and consultants wanting to affiliate with a model? And what they really wanted wasn't just the model. They wanted referrals. And then what happened to the major company, their model expanded, and they wanted people that were a little less passive. And they felt that they were getting screwed. The corporate company felt like they were getting not enough money, and they wanted to have the trainers and the consultants be helping with sales and marketing. What's the matter with those guys? Okay, how did that happen? How did that disconnect and that starting to drift apart happen? Was the parent company, the franchisor, good at market research? Well, they were good at market research related to their product and taking care of the clients, but were they good at market research related to the franchisees, the partners? No. They didn't feel the drift happen until it happened and they were ticked off. Were they good at marketing? No, because they knew how to market initially what their concept was, but it was fairly self-centered. And if you're really good at marketing, you have this whole discussion about what's the value of the local, what's the value of the interaction. That wasn't worked out because they didn't even know if they were leading with passive or aggressive people. So I don't know if they were good at market research or marketing, and that could have answered all of this. Were they good at operational excellence? Well, they might have been looked at that way because they had a model, and they did train people, and everybody got certified in the method that they were doing. But there was a wide variety in what the trainers and consultants were providing. So, no. Okay, were they good at product development and being innovative so that there was something to follow? In this case, they were, but it's not enough if the market research and the marketing was inadequate to really distinguish who they wanted to have on board. Were they good at the care and feeding of the franchisees, that relationship and community building? No, because there wouldn't have been this division. Now, they tried, but there wouldn't have been this drift. And how about the fifth one, or the last one? Were they good at the negotiation about the loan, about the agreement, the legal agreement, and the contract and the administration? I bet they weren't. But even if they were, let's say their initial contract called for one thing, and then they realize they've got this drift. If you discover that your contract doesn't make sense, you can go back and revisit, and you got to renegotiate rather than leave people stranded. And that was what this company did, by the way. Instead of fixing the marketing and market research, they had the realization that there was just a contract that didn't make sense anymore. And they went back and essentially started again. And some of the trainers and some of the consultants stayed, and some of them said, you know what, I like the old model, I'm out of here. And they were okay. They didn't let it drift away, and they were all right. So you can discover that you have a mismatch and that your franchise doesn't make sense. But, you know, if your contract doesn't make sense, don't let the fights happen. Don't let the legal battles brew. Go back and renegotiate. How about the last one? The IT company that kind of became a de facto franchise. They were so successful. Sounds really good. But what happens when a big corporation wants to make it a technology division? What happens when the baby boomer owners of those individual companies want to sell and the exit strategies are all a mess? Can you negotiate with the top group, you know, the major company that's total? Do you have to negotiate with each individual one? I mean, I don't know if they're coming or going. Wow. Okay. Was the major company, the combined company, good at market research? Yeah. They identified the individual towns that they felt that would be good with this. Were they good at marketing? Yeah, almost too good. Although they didn't clarify the difference between the core company and the sub-companies, were they excellent at the operational excellence and consistency of service? Yes. How about product innovation? Yes. Here we go again. Where they fell down, two things, is in the contract negotiation, they did not become a full roll-up officially. When they had the momentum somewhere between 5 companies and 35, somewhere in there they knew they were a roll-up and didn't face it. Didn't officially make it a roll-up because then they wouldn't have had the crumbling of the individual companies feeling like they were all still independent. They took the money. They went, you know, kind of a, they went for the, I guess, a little greed. They went for the jobs. They went for the contracts and didn't realize that they were stranding each other. It does pay to have those 5 or 6 key elements in place so you don't inadvertently drift into a mixed model. If you're looking at franchising, because you got a lot of leaders, you got a lot of people who want to say their opinion and want to act independent. And if those 5 things that I've talked about, related to marketing and operational excellence, product innovation, the contract administration, and the care and feeding of the franchisees, make a huge difference in the glue in whether or not it'll last. Okay, ask me your questions, contact me. If you're thinking of looking at a franchise, we can talk about the specifics. I can be reached at aldana@ambler.com or 1-888-ALDANA. This is the Growth Strategist. As every week I do, I wish you accelerated growth with sustained profitability. This is Aldana Ambler signing out.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning in to the Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of the Growth Strategist. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.